network. This is the news. This is the network. That's right. This is the WGXC Morning Show. You have tuned into.
Stand by for news. I'm Tom Rowe in April.
And today on the WGXC Afternoon Show, we will hear from Liam Singer, the leader, owner of the Avalon Lounge in Catskill. It's their fourth anniversary this weekend. They're celebrating with the show tonight and the celebration for the local Arts Council on Saturday. We'll hear all about that. And we'll also speak with Carol Russoff, the director of the upcoming production of Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream at the Churchtown Round Barn in Columbia County. So we've got all that, plus the news from the Public News Service and the national headlines there from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. It all starts after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network.
This is Stan Domeski of the Feelies, and you're listening to 90.7 FM, WGXC Accra.
Hello, WGXC listeners. This is Rachel Ann Margaret Schulman. Campbell Hudson Dinner is returned. Come one and come all. Community Dinner is back at Campbell Hudson on Tuesday, September 5th at 5:30 p.m. at our Solaris Building at 360 Warren Street, Hudson, New York. Come and experience our community, meet new people and old friends over a fresh prepared meal with locally sourced vegetables that made by local volunteers. We'll be glad to see you there. Please bring a friend.
Waif Farm respectfully and humbly acknowledges the past, present, and future Indigenous peoples on whose ancestral lands Waif Farm and WGXC operate and broadcast. The Mohicans name themselves the people of the waters that are never still following their arrival along the Great Ebb Tide River, also known as the Hudson. The Mohicans stewarded this land over many generations and in dynamic communication and interaction with diverse Indigenous peoples, including the Haudenosaunee Mohawk and the Munsee Lenape. Mohican descendants today live in communities in Ontario, Wisconsin, and Oklahoma. For more information on Mohican history and the contemporary community of the Stockbridge-Munsee Band of Mohican Indians, please visit mohican.com.
Waif Farm's WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Daniel Rue of Tivoli, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowe in Accra with the WGXC Daily News for Friday, August 25th. Go to the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. Andrea Macko reports for Porcupine Soup that a dispute between two youth football leagues recently spilled over into a town of Caro meeting. On July 19th, the Caro Town Board voted to give use of the longtime Pop Warner shed at Angelo Canna Town Park to a new youth league, and incorrectly said in the resolution that, quote, Greene County Panthers Pop Warner football is changing to Greene County Panthers AYF, American Youth Football, unquote. Actually, the two leagues are in a dispute, and the Caro Town Board turned over the use of a shed that was full of the other league's equipment. Stacy Serson White, the cheer coordinator and now president of the Greene County Pop Warner, said at the board's August 16th meeting, quote, you turned over the shed with our contents in it without even notifying us. We did not even find out from the board that somebody had asked to use it and access was already given to somebody else, unquote. At that meeting, the town board declined to amend or rescind their incorrect resolution and gave the youth group, using the shed first, 3 to 5 days to remove their property from the shed. Green County Pop Warner is not having football this year, only cheer, because many volunteers, football coaches, and board members from the group left to form their own league. Town Supervisor Jason Watts explained he was not sure what he was voting on in the original resolution. Watts said, quote, "I didn't even realize we were taking it away from you. When we did, I went out and I started looking for another building for you to go in, and I found one right in the town park. You told me you didn't want that one," unquote. The story also quotes representatives from both leagues saying they are doing it all for the children. Read more about this story in Porcupine Soup. Jamal Cutler reports for Columbia Green Media that tax bills for residents in the Ichabod Crane Central School District will be mailed by August 31st, and residents of Chatham, Ghent, Kinderhook, Nassau, Skodak, Stockport, and Stuyvesant will see their school tax bills around then, too. Ichabod Crane Central School District business manager Mike Brennan said, quote, "The bills are mailed by August 31st, and payment is set for September 1st through the 30th. If you pay in the month of December, there's a 2% penalty. After November 1st, all the bills are handed over to the county. If someone hasn't paid by November 1st, they will pay directly to the county. The county makes us whole after the new year on all these unpaid taxes. Taxes can be dropped off at any time at the Valencia Bank of Greene County. They can also be mailed in or paid online," unquote. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Amal Tiaj reports for News 10 that New York's Department of Environmental Conservation is proposing a statewide fee for every ton of trash that does not get recycled or composted. The $5 surcharge per ton of trash, the DEC says, would discourage disposal and generate $133 million per year. The DEC said in a statement, quote, "By focusing on reducing waste at its source, returning materials back to productive use, and diverting waste from landfills, harmful greenhouse gas emissions will be avoided while sustaining the supply chain," unquote. In all, the DEC's proposed solid waste management plan got more than 1,000 comments from the public. Read more about this story for News 10, and read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom, wgxc.org.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
I really believe this is a very sad day for America. This should never happen. If you challenge an election, you should be able to challenge an election. I thought the election was a rigged election, a stolen election.
Former President Donald Trump surrendered himself to Fulton County, Georgia yesterday and is out on a $200,000 bond. Along with 18 other co-defendants, he's being charged with an assortment of crimes relating to tampering with the outcome of the 2020 election. He said he did nothing wrong and pointed the finger of blame at the prosecutors in the case, saying they were interfering with an election. After Wednesday's Republican primary debate, some political experts feel the candidates began to come into their own, although their performances were somewhat lackluster. Tim Carney at the American Enterprise Institute notes a change the debates made in the race.
Nikki Haley made herself more of a force in this race. That would be the primary change. The fundamental fact is that Donald Trump still is way ahead in the polls. He's way ahead in the Iowa and New Hampshire polls. And for that reason, that hasn't changed.
The former president skipped the debate and did a pre-taped interview with former Fox News host Tucker Carlson. Carney feels the former president's reasons for not attending the debate were more self-serving than in the public interest. Meanwhile, House Speaker Kevin McCarthy has indicated impeachment proceedings against President Joe Biden could move forward when Congress returns to session next month. Formal articles of impeachment were filed against Biden by Florida Republican Representative Gary Stube earlier this month. While Senate Republicans are worried about how this could play out, Cedric Richmond with the Democratic National Committee says instead of Biden, McCarthy is the one who should be worried.
McCarthy wakes up every day praying he still has 218 votes to be Speaker of the House. I've been there and I know it. Depending on what he says today, it may change tomorrow, depending on where a handful of Republicans decide that they want to drag him around.
New York Governor Kathy Hochul is calling on Washington to provide the state with increased funding to handle the influx of migrants. In a letter to Biden, Hochul demanded action on expedited work authorization to get migrants out of shelters, financial support for a slew of areas, and reimbursement of the state's National Guard. She describes the work both New York City and New York State have done to address the growing migrant population.
And in our budget, we allocated over $1 billion, now upwards of $1.5 billion, for providing shelter, National Guard, public health, transit, K-12 case management and legal services to asylum seekers, especially the housing.
I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. In the first 2024 GOP primary debate, Vivek Ramaswamy reiterated his campaign pledge to pardon former President Trump. How did presidential pardons evolve, and what are their limitations? Article 2, Section 2 of the Constitution gives the president the authority to, quote, grant reprieves and pardons for offenses against the United States, except in cases of impeachment. Proposed by Alexander Hamilton, the Constitutional Convention debated whether the president could unilaterally pardon or whether approval was needed by the Senate. The U.S. Supreme Court later interpreted Section 2 as unilateral with broad powers, but limited to federal offenses. Among the most controversial are President Andrew Johnson's pardon of Confederate President Jefferson Davis, and in recent times, President Gerald Ford's pardon of President Richard Nixon, both citing the need for reconciliation. The White House Historical Society points out that in order for a pardon to be given, a crime must first be committed. If so, pardons can only extend to federal, not state crimes, and pardons do not extend to impeachment convictions. DOJ statistics show that there were 33,714 pardons from 1900 to 2022. President Biden has issued 5,869 and former President Trump 7,498. Can a president pardon him or herself? We'll have more on that question in our next report. Find out more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Friday, August 25th. Local early morning temperatures range from 61 degrees in Medusa to 67 in Kinderhook. Regional average soil temperature is 69 degrees. Pollen levels have bottomed out, but are expected to rise back up to medium territory over the weekend. This morning will be the rainiest, then things calm down. Well, mostly, there is some thunder expected this afternoon. A high of 75 happens at 3 p.m. Overnight, rain comes to an end by midnight, and we see a muggy feeling low of 66 degrees. Saturday will be warm with a high of 81 at 4 p.m. Some afternoon raindrops are expected. 60 degrees overnight takes us into a dry-looking Sunday with a high of 76. Monday, still dry, high of 77. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 4:43 a.m., high tide at 9:39 a.m., low tide again at 4:20 p.m., and high tide once again at 10:14 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 73 degrees and the tide strength will be low. Sunset today will be at 7:29 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:10 a.m. Looking way up, we see X-class flare chances are up to 5%. Plasma winds will be slow at 392 kilometers per second with a thin density of less than 1 proton per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 4 megahertz till dark, then fair below 60 megahertz overnight. There are no chances of aurora this evening, and the current sunspot number is 86. This has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Maker Syndicate.
Listen to what the flower people say. It's getting louder every day.
And I'm Tom Rowe. You are tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. I'm live in Acre this morning. And now on the line, we have with us Liam Singer, the owner and the leader of the Avalon Lounge in Catskill, celebrating its 4-year anniversary tonight, right?
That is correct. 4 years.
You have just been open for like a little bit before the pandemic and then a huge bit during the pandemic, and now the weird whatever times we are in. How has 4 years been?
It has definitely been up and down. Yeah, we had about 8 months of normal operations before March of 2020, and then we very quickly turned into a takeout and delivery restaurant. Our Korean menu really is what saved us because it was a kind of unique option in the area.
And we should point out in this timeline, you also made a bunch of masks right at the beginning and sort of helped with the pandemic.
Yeah, I was part of a group. Sorry, my daughter's getting involved here. I was part of a group that got together and sort of pooled resources in the area and used the Basilica space to sort of form a pop-up face shield operation, which we mainly distributed to healthcare workers. I think it was about June or so of 2021, we were able to start having, some events inside again, and we have been going since then.
And I think I've seen you post on social media sometimes about the audiences post COVID or whatever the period we're in. Mm-hmm. I remember you posted about people not buying advanced tickets as much as they did before,
yeah,
right?
True. Yeah. Habits have definitely changed. I do think, there's a little less planning, a little more sort of, we're going to, wait to the night of the event and see. And yeah, that does maybe feel like a habit that's been imported from times when, we don't know if we'll be sick or someone will be sick, or so we just don't sort of make those advanced plans. I've had to sort of adjust to that. And I feel like people's main interest, even when it comes to music and parties, is just going to an event their friends will be at. So a lot of our successful live shows are more local acts, or are carried by more local acts. Who will just sort of bring a core group of people out that will drive the evening.
Yeah, you do so many shows. I'm sure there's nights that it's frustrating that some really great national or international band comes through and there's not a big crowd.
I do have those nights. I have nights where I'm sitting behind the soundboard wondering where everyone is. It's a learning process. It's a difficult area to necessarily know how to promote stuff beyond Instagram and Facebook, and I'm still learning ways to get the word out about shows and learning what works and what doesn't. I can have a band I think is amazing, but if there aren't enough other people who are interested, it doesn't matter. So I'm 4 years in, still figuring it out, but I do think I'm starting to have a better handle on what kind of thing can work.
And besides just curated shows from incredible bands, you're also doing some public service events and working with local community groups. Like Saturday is the, tonight you're celebrating your 4 year anniversary, and Saturday the local arts council has a celebration about the local show they have, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Any chance we have to partner with other groups in Catskill. That's one of the joys of operating in a small town is it's easy to work together with sort of disparate entities, and that's the fun thing, to not just be in your own little bubble.
And besides the music shows, what works, you have like, what works the best other things? What do people like? Cause you do have comedy shows, the story slams,
we're starting to book more comedy. We just had a really great sketch troupe from the city, and then next month we have a show with Chris Gethard, whose name you might not recognize, but if you looked him up, you would recognize him. He's been on Broad City and a bunch of other shows, which is very funny. So that's something I'm hoping we can do more of. I love comedy. We do have a monthly story slam, which is sort of like a Moth Radio Hour kind of event, and that always has a nice crowd. It's sort of a core group of people that come again and again, but it's always nice when new people show up to that. And some film screenings, too. We've had some film screenings. We partnered with a station out of Troy to show a recently made documentary about Casa Susana, which was a safe house for queer and trans people in the 50s and 60s in the Catskills. And we have plans for a Halloween movie showing close to Halloween. So, yeah, definitely try to mix it up. It's a pretty versatile space. We have a karaoke night every other Monday that's taken on quite a following. Yeah, always up for new ideas and new events.
And if people haven't been there, too, there's an upstairs, and sometimes there's events going on up there, too, or it's a place you can get away from the event.
And
you did mention the fabulous Korean food as well.
Yes, yes. We are very lucky to have a chef who put together a really, really delicious kind of home-style Korean menu that's been a hit from the word go, which has become a huge part of our identity.
And then I'm kind of excited about this show in September that you're doing with, it's a festival, and it's the first night's at Tubby's in Kingston, but Saturday is at Avalon and at Left Bank Ciders, and Sunday is at Avalon and Spike's Record Rack, which the walking around Catskill, that seems like a possibility to do future things too like this.
Yeah, it was really the brainchild of Al who put it together. He has run an indie label called Dromedary Records for decades now, and that was really sort of one of the main ideas behind planning the festival this way. Is he really likes the idea of getting people to sort of bounce around from spot to spot in Catskill and sort of make it a village-wide thing. It's a festival that's largely focused on kind of 90s indie rock. There's several bands reuniting for the first time in, 10 or 20 years. So it's a somewhat niche thing, but ticket sales have been good, and I think we're going to have a really nice crowd for that one.
Is there over the 4 years? What is do you have a favorite show?
I'd have to sort of divide it into categories. I really love, we have a monthly party called Community Rave Network that is thrown by a group of local DJs. And that has just, as a party, taken on a really incredible energy. So that's always one of my favorite nights. We also have a sort of newer party called Primal Disco, which is also sort of, house techno disco based, but different kind of vibe and also wonderful. And then in terms of live shows, we've hosted a band twice now called Fawn Fables, who are out of California. And I have to say that's probably my favorite act who's come through. They're kind of I guess you'd say experimental folk or dream folk band that tours as a family. The daughters play with the parents, and it's a pretty magical vibe. And then we've also just had a chance to once in a while host artists who are sort of really could be playing much larger rooms but decide to play Avalon. So earlier this year we had Screaming Females, who are a really, really great pop punk band. They play huge venues in the city and stuff. So that was a really fun opportunity. And last year we hosted Finez, who's a personal favorite sort of experimental electronic artist. We had a great show in partnership with Wave Farm, with Aaron Dillaway and Victoria Shen, which was a really kind of mind-blowing noise show. We've had a number of really memorable nights there.
I'm guessing when you open things, you probably thought things would go a certain way, and they've probably gone a certain different way. Like, what have you been surprised about?
That is a good question. I mean, there have been just so many dynamics learning how to balance the food side of things and the drink side of things. I mean, one early surprise was that we were expecting to open with a full liquor license, since the previous business had one, but for various New York State reasons, we ended up opening with a beer wine license. So that sort of changed the vibe from what we expected very quickly, and pretty proud of the drink menu we've accomplished at this point. But that was sort of an initial challenge. And yeah, I think early on I sort of had the idea that, you know, every weekend we would have a band and then a DJ or something like that. But I've just kind of learned to learn to work with people's newer habits, especially after COVID. I mean, not only have people's ticket buying habits changed, but sort of the timeline of an average night has changed. People don't stay out quite as late. So, yeah, lots of punches to roll with.
Hmm. And so tell us about this weekend's shows.
Yeah, tonight is going to be, I'm really excited for tonight. It's Midnight Magic is a band, maybe not, you know, a household name, but if you put on a couple of their hit tracks, a lot of listeners would probably recognize them. And they've been around for over a decade now, New York City based, really kind of, they describe themselves as cosmic disco. They're very indebted to that kind of 70s and 80s New York dance music sound, but they're a live act, 7-piece horn section, just a really incredible party band. And they're playing, and then we have just a few of our favorite local DJs who contributed a lot to Avalon. Rudy, who helped put the night together, and SDB, and Lunar Moss, who will be playing more kind of ambient experimental stuff upstairs. And it's going to be a blast. I'm looking forward.
And then Saturday, the Arts Council has DJ Neva and Falutha, is that?
Falutha, yeah. Falutha. Yeah, two more local favorites. Falutha is Mike Mosby, who's actually about to open a gallery space here in Catskill, right down the street from Avalon. And Neva, you know, should be well known to regular WGXC listeners. And the two of them are going to DJ. That will be more kind of, I would imagine, world music, Afrobeat, Afro house, and then Falutha likes to take it more into a techno territory. So that'll be a great party as well.
Yes. So tonight, two former WGXC DJs, SVB and Lunar Moss, and Saturday, a current WGXC DJ, Neva. And yeah, we should say that almost all the shows are have a live web stream from Avalon on WGXC, and many are broadcast on 90.7 FM too.
Absolutely.
All right. Anything else folks should know about the four-year anniversary of the Avalon Lounge in Catskill, Liam Singer?
No, I'm just extremely grateful to people who go out of their way to come to shows at Avalon. I know, you know, that late night drive is not always easy, and I appreciate it. And if you haven't made it out, come to the show.
All right. Thank you for all that you do, and for bringing so many great bands and DJs and acts to Catskill.
Thanks for having me on.
All right. You're listening to the WGXC Morning Show. Whoops, we're not plugged in. Thank you, Liam.
Thank you.
Baby, you're casting your spell on me. I say, oh, them, oh, them, oh, them, oh.
Russoff, the director of the upcoming production of Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream at the Churchtown Dairy Round Barn. Carol, nice to have you on the WGXC Afternoon Show.
Thanks, Tom.
Whoops, I got you a little too loud. Now, there you go. So tell us, I guess if you're doing Shakespeare, probably you're adapting it, you're thinking about how to do it differently because everybody's done it, and the location seems like to be the most important thing about where you're doing it, to start off with what your plan would be. Is that right, or did you start somewhere else?
Yeah, about 8 years ago, I walked into Rick Anderson designed the Round Barn. It's magnificent. It's just a magnificent inside and out. And walking around, because they put a false floor in the summers when they take the cows out to pasture all summer. So we were able to walk around comfortably and not on hay nor on poop. And we were, I realized that it was the church, it was the Globe Theater, and how easy it would be. It turned out not to be that easy, but how lovely and easy it would be to make it into a facsimile of the Globe and do a little Shakespeare there.
Yeah, there aren't too many spots around here, but if you look at the photo of the place, it looks Shakespearean.
Right, right. So we're using a gallery up there, the loft, for one gallery seat, which was like the old Globe. And we're stacking a semicircle of haystacks, hay bales, to make bleacher seating, and then chairs in front of those, a half circle, and then there are spots on the floor for what was called in Shakespeare's time for the groundlings, people who paid the cheapest ticket who had to stand up throughout the whole show. And they must have been very devoted because, you know, Hamlet is 3.5 hours long. So they would have, that is a devoted audience to stand through Hamlet and other history plays.
They didn't have all the vast entertainment choices that we have today, though.
No, that's
so,
right.
People's attention spans lasted a little longer. tell us, but now we've teased people with this particular play at the Churchtown Dairy Round Barn. Tell us about how you got here. I mean, this is not your first play you're putting together, right?
Oh, no, goodness. I've taught and directed here and there and everywhere. I started out in California and then lived in England for 10 years and made theater. Then returned to California, taught in college level and high school level. And then I moved to New York for love. Yay for me. And came upstate because that was my late husband's desire to live in the country. So I'm so glad we did. It's wonderful here and especially beautiful day to day.
And how are, how do you think, do you like theater audiences here?
Oh, terrific, except I haven't seen any. This is a part of the reason that I want to do this. I've never been lately in New York City or up here in what might be considered an egalitarian and diverse audience. I turn around at fancy venues and see, along with me having paid a hefty ticket price, other white people who have paid a hefty ticket price. And I'm an old hippie at heart. I want theater for all, not just for those precious few who could pay for the ticket or were brought up to appreciate the arts in a certain privileged way.
And so you're actually taking steps to do that with this play, right?
Right. Making it free, thanks to Abby Rockefeller, the owner of the Churchtown Dairy. And it being a free ticket makes it very popular. And then, so we sold out very quickly. And because we are busing people each night, we're busing 20 people from Hudson who otherwise might not have the transportation, who otherwise might not be interested in watching Shakespeare. And we have takers. So we're able to offer that. And a food truck every night in front, starting at 6 o'clock for an hour before the house opens. So I'm hoping it'll be an event which will have a future.
It seems like it could be an annual community event.
I would hope so. It's so far so good. We haven't opened yet, but we're very excited and overcome obstacles and away we go.
Why did you pick this particular, I guess you picked the Shakespeare with the idea of the venue, why did you pick this particular play?
A Midsummer Night's Dream has an amazing soliloquy in it, aside from being a delightful play and I think the most accessible of Shakespeare's plays and a very physical play. You can describe what's happening with your body. You know, the actors are very agile and active in this play. Abby wanted to cut it down to an hour and a half so we wouldn't have to use the toilets too much and we don't have an intermission. So it's an hour and a half Shakespeare with the language, of course, because I value the language very highly and I don't particularly take to, you know, doing Shakespeare without Shakespeare's language. So an hour and a half, and Titania is the queen of the forest, and she's having a dreadful fight with Oberon, the king of the forest. And it has turned nature upside down. And its resemblance, it's so striking, the resemblance to our climate change. It's almost as though Titania is being a Cassandra character, you know, seeing the future. And I hope the audience gets that, because it is very moving and strikingly important right now.
And
the recognition of that.
And it might have been there was a little ice age during Shakespeare's time, so might have been that he was reflecting events of the time that are sort of repeating or happening again in different ways.
Yeah, history repeating itself. And they were uncomfortable because Queen Elizabeth didn't have any children, so they were uncomfortable about the succession. And we're certainly uncomfortable and anxious about our presidential succession. So there's lots of similarities, both.
I guess they'd had recent plagues too, right?
That's right. It had just been the bubonic plague, which was our COVID, right? So it's striking. It's amazing.
And it's also a lovely summertime play kind of, right, too?
Yeah, and it's all sorts of fun, and it's magic and young lovers. And the young lovers, I wanted to cast them young, and I did. They're teenagers, and some of them new to the stage. Many people in the cast. This was open auditions.
Yeah, what is it like auditioning people here? Was it a million people coming out?
It was
out,
amazing.
Or?
Yeah. It was. It was incredible. Lots of people showed up, most of whom had never been on stage before, taking the chance. And we've cast a lot of newbies to the stage. I hope they fall in love with the process and continue. We're able to pay them a little stipend, which is wonderful. And I think we have a good model for future community theater in our very own Columbia County. You know, we can really own this, I think. And I'm very happy to pass the baton on to the next person who'll direct.
Well, I was going to ask,
I'm 80, I'm done.
Do you have an idea to do another one next year? Or
I would love to have, well, I don't know, not me personally. I would love to pass the baton to someone young and able and loving of Shakespeare and on the ground, a grassroots sort of person, you know, a grassroots production. That's certainly what this is grassroots.
On a farm too.
Yes. And people can come and tour the farm and, you know, eat from the truck, from the food truck, and tour the beautiful, incredible farm. And the principles of the farm are quite something. I'm not well versed in what the principles are, but it's farming that's biodynamic is now an old word, right? But it's what do you call it when things keep on going? Whatever the word
renewable,
is,
renewable, regenerative.
Regenerative, it's an S word. Maybe your listeners
that's
can
right.
call.
Call 518-622-2598 if you have the lucky word of the day.
Yeah. My grandson is doing work in this, and it's called When Things Keep On Going. I don't know.
Well,
sorry.
Maybe you can recall. What are the details this weekend? I guess it's sold out, but it's...
It's sold out, but there's a possibility of people... write email midsummerboxoffice@gmail.com. They can get on a waiting list, and people are coming off the waiting list getting tickets because I think at the beginning some patrons brought a whole bunch, you know, bought blocks just in case they had a party to go with them. And so there'll be tickets available, being made available all this week. So people should give it a try and voice whether they want to be a groundling, which is sitting on the floor on comfortable cushions, or in the chairs, which is for people my age, or in hay bale bleachers, or in the loft, which is up above looking down.
And what's that email address again if they want to get on the standby list?
midsummerboxoffice@gmail.com.
MidsummerBoxOffice@gmail.com.
Yes.
All right, Carol Russoff, anything else we should know about this weekend's production of Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream at the Churchtown Dairy Round Barn?
I can't think of anything else, but now let's call it the Churchtown Dairy Globe.
All right, at least for this weekend it is. It's,
yeah, at least for this weekend. If anyone calls in and tells you that word that I can't think of, I'd appreciate it.
Von Claverack or something like that? No.
The Churchtown Dairy, the address is in Hudson. But
oh, it's in
really
Hudson, right, yes.
Yeah. It's not really in Hudson. So, regenerative.
All right, we're still waiting for that word, callers.
Yes, you are. Okay.
All right. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for your time. Thank you for your time and for your interest.
And here it's time now on WGXC to update you with what's going on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org. Go there and you can click on the add an event button. And if you're helping put on some local event, you can cut and paste the information in the boxes. Soon enough, someone like me will be reading about your event on the radio at 90.7 and seeing it around the world in the WGXC community calendar at wgxc.org. Friday, August 25th, there's a House Blend concert. It's the third one at PS21 in Chatham with Adam Tendler on piano and Ayono Katarogo on percussion. That's from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at PS21 in Chatham on Friday night. Saturday in Catskill at the United Methodist Church, the weekly ukulele jam happens from 1:30 to 3 p.m. In Great Barrington Saturday at Ski Butternut, the Pink Floyd cover band The Machine are doing The Wall in its entirety at Ski Butternut in Great Barrington, 4:30 p.m. to 10. There's a nature community masquerade at the Kingston Point Rotary Park Saturday, August 26th at 5 p.m. William Tyler and the Impossible Truth and Garcia Peoples perform at Tubby's in Kingston Saturday, August 26th. That's at 8 p.m. Sunday, August 27th is the traditional Irish music session. Every week at the Shamrock House, you can bring out your instruments and jam with other locals from 2 to 5 p.m. at the Shamrock House in East Durham. Then on Monday, August 28th, Columbia County is honoring a vet. Veterans Committee will honor Tech Sergeant Jack Hallenbach. The public is invited at the ceremony 9 a.m. at the Columbia County Office Building, 401 State Street in Hudson. These events and many more are on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org.
We're joined today by Blair Horner, Executive Director of NYPIRG, New York Public Interest Research Group. They're actually celebrating or observing their 50th anniversary this year. But Blair had suggested we talk a little bit about an updated website that New York State has put up or amended, newyorkdoctorprofile.com. And also they just released a report about how the state is spending hundreds of millions of dollars in climate costs and not making the polluters who are wreaking enormous profits, you know, pay for any of that. But Blair, why is New York Doctor Profile important?
Well, the thanks for having me, Mark. The cornerstone of medicine is that the patient gives their informed consent to whatever the procedure is or whatever the therapy is, whatever it is. I mean, the patient has to give their informed consent. And how do you give informed consent if you don't have any information? And so New York established nearly two decades ago a website where people can go to check on the backgrounds of their doctors. And in a world where increasingly many of us have to deal with lists of providers who are willing to accept new patients and are in network, it's not like we have complete freedom to choose. And so we think it's important that people get under the hood and check out their doctors before they go see them. The vast majority of physicians, of course, are competent and caring. And so it's most of the time it's not a big deal. But it's good to know if there are if there's any sort of disciplinary action or limitation on the license of any physician before you go to see them. So this website's been in existence now for a long time. The Hochul administration has given it a facelift. Which stands in stark contrast to her predecessor who tried to kill it. So we think it's good that they've tried to improve it, but we view it as a buried treasure within state government because there's really very little information available to the public about how to get it.
So I understand this is something that NYPIRG actually advocated for a number of years. I did go on this morning and check out my, you know, personal physician. No criminal activities, no discipline, and notice he's a member of Physicians for Social Responsibility. But, how can the average person use it?
Well, again, you have to know it exists. And that's why it's great that you're talking to me about it, Mark. This is one way to have your listeners know it exists. It's a website created by the New York State government, run by the New York State Health Department. It's NY Doctor Profile, all one word, not New York, nydoctorprofile.com. And you can go there and type in the doctor's name, and you can also search by areas to see what other kind of providers, what other providers are in your area, and you can do some searches. So the facelift makes the website, which had not been updated in 15 years, makes the more user-friendly and more, you know, feel, look and feel of something that's contemporary as compared to what it used to look like.
So how well does either New York State or, you know, the larger medical profession, how well do they do in actually, you know, if a doctor or other medical professional is not doing a good job, are they willing to actually take discipline against them or require them to, you know, get retraining? Is there, you know, good oversight of the medical profession?
Well, New York, the short answer is no. The longer answer is that New York probably ranks, you know, in the middle-ish of the country in terms of sanctioning bad doctors. So there's certainly room for growth, but we're not one of the worst in the country. The state has something called an Office of Professional Medical Conduct, which you can access through the doctor profile. Their job is to make sure that a complaint filed against the doctor gets investigated and they deal with it, whatever the appropriate issue is. The problem, again, is nobody knows about it, the public, that is, the patients don't know. And one of the interesting new things that have been added to the website is that if there is a limitation on a doctor's profile, on a doctor's license, like they have to be chaperoned if they're meeting with someone from the opposite sex, for example. In the old days, you'd never know unless you were, you know, Carnac the Magnificent, which Mark and I understand that reference, but maybe not every listener does, which is a Johnny Carson, former comedian routine. And unless you sort of could figure this out on your own, no one would know about it. But on the profile now, if you can find the profile, it does list if there's any sort of limitation on the physician's license. So the state grants on behalf of the public the license to practice to a physician if the Office of Professional Medical Conduct, which is part of the health department, sanctions the physician. The way that you find out about it is really through the profile. And if there's any limitation on the physician, in terms of like they're not allowed to write scripts for opioids, for example, the way to find out about that is to go through the profile.
So that's nydoctorprofile.com. But also today, Nyberg is releasing, I guess, a little report. New York has faced hundreds of millions of dollars in climate costs while big oil racks up huge profits, nearly three-quarters of $1 trillion over the past 30 months. And I know that Nyberg and others had pushed something called the Climate Superfund Act, trying to get the largest polluters to pay to help with the climate costs. What sort of new information coming out of this report you're releasing today?
Well, I think we're trying to draw attention to the fact that when the governor responds appropriately, you know, to climate damages in the state, or announces that she's going to do something to create more resiliency in the infrastructure of the state, for example, to deal with climate change, increasingly climate catastrophe, that what is often overlooked is the fact that that's all being paid for by New Yorkers, taxpayers, basically. And the costs are going to go up. So what we did is we looked at the governor's releases over the past year to see how many of them we could really clearly identify as either a climate cost or resiliency, and totaled it up. But it was almost $2 billion in the past 12 months that the governor has announced in terms of these projects that are coming out of the taxpayers' accounts. And meanwhile, the oil companies, who are responsible for the problem of climate catastrophe that we're all living through, orange sky in New York City, wildfires all from coast to coast in Canada and all over Europe, unbelievable heat waves, all of that is because they knew 40 years ago that this was going to happen. And instead of telling everybody and alerting us, they lied about it, continued to actually extract the product and pump it out. So we think they should pay. And one of the ways that we looked at it is, do they have the money to do it? And if you look at the biggest Western, publicly traded Western companies and Saudi Aramco, they made almost $3 trillion in profits over the last 30 months, 2.5 years. And so why shouldn't the state go after some of their dough to offset the increasing climate costs that the state of New York faces, since they're responsible and they have the money? The Climate Change Superfund Act, which you referenced, Mark, is legislation that does that, $3 billion a year annually for the next 25 years, and is designed in such a way that the companies can't pass the cost on to the public. They have to eat it. And we think that's the appropriate response to the increasingly expensive, because it's not like climate catastrophe is going to get any better in the next bunch of years. It's going to just keep getting worse, and the costs are going to keep going up. So let's make the oil companies pay for it.
Now, actually, most of the money that actually in New York goes towards, well, at least renewable energy, actually comes from utility companies. It's a surcharge on your utility bills, about $500 million or so a year. Now, the Climate Superfund Act, you know, did pass the Senate last year, but did not move in the Assembly. Estimates anywhere from $10 to $30 billion a year needed to deal with climate costs. You know, what is the response of both the State Assembly and the governor at this point to the points that you're making that we should be making the polluters pay in the last minute?
They have, in my opinion, inappropriate response, which is we don't believe that the cost won't be passed on to consumers. We'll do other things to pass costs on to consumers, but it sounds more like what the oil companies say. We have a report done by an independent think tank, the Institute for Policy Integrity at NYU Law School, which says, and it's basic economics, that if you do it right, you can make them pay. And so far, you know, it's going to just take, I think, bone-crushing pressure to get the governor and the assembly to be, get on board on this, because otherwise New Yorkers will either lose access to services or have to pay more in their tax bill to offset the cost of climate catastrophe. That's all the responsibility of the oil companies.
So we've been talking with Blair Horner, NYPIRG, N-Y-P-I-R-G .org, if you want more information. And this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
So we